reading this morning is from Mark chapter 7, verses 1 to 23. It's found on 1010 in the Church Bible. So Mark 7. The Pharisees and some of the teachers of the law who had come from Jerusalem gathered round Jesus and saw some of his disciples eating food with hands that were defiled, that is, unwashed. The Pharisees and all the Jews do not eat unless they give their hands a ceremonial washing, holding to the tradition of the elders. When they come from the marketplace, they do not eat unless they wash. And they observe many other traditions, such as the washing of cups, pitchers, and kettles. So the Pharisees and teachers of the law asked Jesus, "Why don't your disciples live according to the tradition of the elders, instead of eating their food with defiled hands?" He replied, "Isaiah was right when he prophesied about you hypocrites. As it is written, 'These people honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. They worship me in vain. Their teachings are merely human rules.' You have let go of the commands of God and are holding on to human traditions." And he continued, "You have a fine way of setting aside the commands of God in order to observe your own traditions. For Moses said, 'Honor your father and mother,' and 'Anyone who curses their father or mother is to be put to death.' But you say that if anyone declares that what might have been used to help their father or mother is korban, that is, devoted to God, then you no longer let them do anything for that father or mother. Thus you nullify the word of God by your tradition that you have handed down. And you do many things like that." Again, Jesus called the crowd to him and said, "Listen to me, everyone, and understand this. Nothing inside a person can defile them by going into them. Rather, it is what comes out of a person that defiles them." After he had left the crowd and entered the house, his disciples asked him about this parable. "Are you so dull?" he asked. "Don't you see that nothing that enters a person from the outside can defile them? For it doesn't go into their heart, but into their stomach, and then out of the body." In saying this, Jesus declared all foods clean. He went on, "What comes out of a person is what defiles them. For it is from within, out of a person's heart, that evil thoughts come. Sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, greed, malice, deceit, lewdness, envy, slander, arrogance, and folly. All these evils come from inside and defile a person."
Thank you very much indeed, Glenys. Good morning, everybody, and a very happy new year to you. Let's pray together, shall we, as we come to look at this passage. Again, Jesus called the crowd to him and said, "Listen to me, everyone, and understand." Father in heaven, we come often in life to you with lots of questions. We ask that we would be as ready to hear your answers. Father, may we, as Jesus has called us to today, listen to him, every one of us, understand and take to heart what we hear. In his name, amen. Well, if you were with us over the festive season, then you might well have taken part in that vote to decide which question we would most like to ask God, or which three questions, in fact. And this morning, we start with a question that came top of the poll, and it's this one: why can't we all just learn to get along? Good question. Maybe you were asking that question just this Christmas time as you watched your family fall out over food, over presents, over washing up, over what next to watch on TV. It's the question we've been asking for these last couple of years over Brexit, isn't it? We're bored of Brexit, and yet we're dismayed that as a nation we feel divided by it. And at times it's just got very nasty. One journalist said this. He said, "Has Brexit helped unleash and legitimize arguments by insult? The referendum," he went on to say, "has opened a Pandora's box of anger and rage. And later he concludes, even children are now brought up to hate. Hate him, hate her, hate Manchester United, hate the Tories, hate the EU. It's got to the point where even the Queen felt the need to say something on her Christmas Day speech when she said, even with the most deeply held differences, treating the other person with respect and as a fellow human being is always a good first step towards a greater understanding. Well, if we're struggling to get along here in the UK, we're not alone, are we? Just across the channel, France's major cities have been affected by riots for 2 months. Republicans and Democrats in America are deadlocked. And so the list of the nations and the peoples who can't get on grows and grows. Well, whether it's families falling out, politicians having a verbal punch-up, nations lining up against each other, we just don't ever seem to be able to get along. No wonder it came top of the poll over Christmas. And we need to hear God's answer. And that's why we had the passage that we had read to us a moment or two ago. We want to start with what God is saying to us through his son, Jesus. And we want to start with his diagnosis of the human condition. So I'd like to invite you to turn back to Mark chapter 7. That's page 1010, if you're using a church Bible. And what we discover, if you were listening carefully as the passage was being read by Glenys a moment or two ago, is Jesus' conclusion is this. The heart of the problem is the problem of the heart. The heart of the problem is the problem of the heart. We struggle to get along because human beings are self-interested creatures. Self-interested creatures. That means that disagreement and conflict is inevitable at every level. Well, let's take a closer look, shall we? Mark chapter 7, verses 1 and 2. Israel's, the country's national religious leaders, have come from the capital, Jerusalem, to take a closer look at what Jesus is up to in his ministry in the north of the country. Now, I don't know whether you've ever particularly spent much time with people who are deeply and devoutly religious. It's quite possible in a Western culture and country like the UK that you've never really spent time with deeply religious people. For them, though, the solution to the world's problems are essentially religious answers, and sometimes quite fanatical religious answers. And these teachers of the law, these Pharisees, are not especially impressed with what they see from Jesus. And an argument begins to brew because Jesus isn't insisting that his disciples wash their hands. No, please don't mishear me. Washing your hands is a good thing when it comes to preventing the spread of germs and so on. But this isn't a matter of hygiene here. No, for the Pharisees, it's about being, did you notice the words in verse 3? Ceremonially clean. Ceremonially clean. Now, read through the Bible, and you actually find it has very little to say about washing of hands. If you came into contact with a dead body, you needed to ceremonially cleanse yourself. Priests at the temple from time to time had to cleanse their hands before serving at the temple. But for the ordinary, everyday folk, it's essentially not discussed and not mentioned anywhere in the Bible that they had to wash their hands in this way. But look at Mark's little aside there in verse 3. Let me read it to you again. The Pharisees and all the Jews do not eat unless they give their hands a ceremonial washing, holding to the traditions of the elders. When they come from the marketplace, perhaps they've come into contact with people who weren't fellow Jews, for example. When they come from the marketplace, they do not eat unless they wash. And they observe many other traditions, such as the washing of cups, pitchers, and kettles. For these men, religious rules were the answers and the antidote to every problem. And as a result, they take issue with Jesus, verse 5, because he doesn't see it that way. And they say to Jesus, why don't your disciples follow our traditions? Your disciples are setting a bad example and are letting the side down. And Jesus' answer introduces for us his diagnosis of the human condition, which I think is going to help us with our question. And his answer comes in two parts. The first part is in verses 6 to 13 there. And essentially here, Jesus says, religion and its rules won't help us. Religion and its rules won't help us. See, the Pharisees, remember again, these men who've come from Jerusalem, their whole outlook on life is the world needs more religion. More religion. If we fill our lives full of rules and routines and rituals, that's how you fix society. But Jesus wants us to see that whether it's the rules of religion or perhaps in the modern day Western world, the conventions of society, human rules, wherever they come from, whatever form they take, human rules, well, really they only mask the problem. They don't fix it. They hide it. So Jesus says, actually, part of the problem is not that there's too little religion. He says part of the problem is that there's too much religion. What do I mean? What does Jesus mean? Well, the clue is there in verse 6, where Jesus chooses to quote from a prophet of the Old Testament, the prophet Isaiah. And do you notice what he says there, quoting Isaiah? These people honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. They worship me in vain. Their teachings are merely human rules. See, the point is, religion allows you to keep all sorts of rules and still, in your heart, be a mean-spirited, selfish individual. We could, for example, say lots of good things about God at church on a Sunday, and yet our hearts be cold and callous. Religion, with all its rules, lets us get away with, in our hearts, being proud and boastful, arrogant and rude, self-serving, and to claim that it's all done in the name of God. How convenient. And Jesus says this is hypocrisy. If your heart is judgmental and bitter and cruel and unforgiving, but you wash your pots and pans in the right way, or you carry a big Bible, or whatever else it might be. Religion just disguises the problem. God's concern, Jesus says, everywhere when you read what Jesus has to say, is that we love God with all our hearts, and we love our neighbor as much as ourselves, even our very enemies. And yet, tragically, human beings use religion to justify doing exactly the opposite. We use religion to hide. We use religion to fight. We use religion to start wars. And Jesus says three times in these verses, that's what's so wrong. Do you see verse 8? You've let go of the commands of God to love God and love your neighbor. You've let go of the commands of God and are holding to human traditions. Verse 9, you have a fine way, Jesus says, to these deeply, deeply religious people. You have a fine way of setting aside the commands of God. This is controversial stuff. Controversial. William Barclay describes this as probably the most controversial passage in the entire New Testament. When he says to Israel's leaders, you have set aside the commands of God in order to observe your traditions. Or verse 13, in his most outrageous way, you nullify the word of God by your tradition. You nullify it. You do away with it. And to make it clear, Jesus offers one example in this text of what he means. And he talks about this idea of what it means to love your parents or to honor your parents. He says, imagine a situation where you dedicate some money to God. And Jews could do that. They could put aside a set of money and say, this is for God. And that might mean this is money I'm going to give over my lifetime to the work of the temple or something else. But this is money set aside for God. But then imagine your parents fall on hard times. Or your parents take ill. Or your parents are too old to work, and they're dependent on you now. and you say, I can't help you, my parents, because I've dedicated my money to God. And Jesus says, that is outrageous. He says, that is perverse. That is utterly, utterly shocking. These are the very people that God calls us to love. It's there in the commandments. Verse 10, Moses said, honor your father and mother. But you, Israel's leaders, verse 11, say that if anyone declares what might have been used to help their father or mother is korban, that is a gift devoted to God, then you no longer let them do anything for their father or mother. Your own parents might suffer. Your own parents might starve. And it's not your fault. More than that, it's not your responsibility. And Jesus says, that is hypocrisy. That is the nature of religion. And if you can just give me just one moment, we'll pick it up. Rules and religion can't help you. Jesus says, it's absurd. Maybe you've experienced religion that looks a bit like that yourself. You know, you've met people who've claimed to be very devout and very much about God, and you found them to be the most unloving kind of people. You come across that? You've been put off God by seeing what religion can do, how ugly it can be. And you know that Jesus experienced that, not just in the slights or the asides or the criticisms of Israel's leaders, but in their decision to silence him by handing him over to the Roman authorities, that he would be crucified by them. That's how dangerous religion is. Religion and rules aren't enough. They won't help us. They don't touch the heart. Our second point from Jesus and the answer to his question of why we can't get along is there in verses 14 to the end. What we need, you see, is not religion, but a new heart. Religion and rules focus on the outside. They don't address our motives and our attitudes. You see verse 18? Nothing that enters a person from the outside can defile them. Jesus says, why? Look at verse 18. It doesn't go into their heart, but into their stomach and then out of their body. No, if we want to know why we don't get on, it's there in verse 20. It's not what goes into people, but it's what comes out of a person is what defiles them, for it is from within, out of a person's heart, that evil thoughts come. The problem, finally, is not out there in the world. It's one we carry around, each one of us in here, the human heart. And Jesus says to us, unless you understand human nature, unless and until you recognize this issue, you really won't ever deal with the problems of the world. As long as it's somewhere out there, as long as it's someone else's fault, you'll continue just to throw stones until you see the problem is inside each one of us. Imagine you go to a doctor and say, I seem to be lacking in energy. And at times I get quite breathless. And I get some aches and some pains down my arm and sometimes in my back. Affects different parts of my body. The doctor might say to you, what you need to do is a little bit more exercise. Why don't you take up running or join a gym? Or why don't you change your diet? Eat differently. Maybe go vegan for January. Or she might ask you a few more questions and say, actually, this could be your heart. You could have heart disease. And if you do, what you need is not exercise or a new diet. What you need is surgery, and soon. Well, Jesus is our heart doctor. And he insists on taking us to the very heart of the problem. Why do we fight and hurt each other? Why do we fall out even with the people we love? Why won't we forgive? Why is it always somebody else's fault? Well, there might be extenuating circumstances, but Jesus says fundamentally the problem is you and your own heart. What Jesus says, particularly in verses 21 to 23, is a pretty devastating conclusion, isn't it? Not one you want to hear, not one I want to hear. John Stott said, what we discover in these verses is that Jesus did not teach the fundamental goodness of human nature. And if the heart is the problem, then that means we need outside help. I don't know of anyone who successfully operated on their own heart. Maybe operated on other things, I don't know. Sounds a bit gruesome to me, but it might just be possible. But I don't know that you can operate on your own heart. But Jesus says that's the kind of surgery that's needed to put this world right. So let's for a moment be sure we've understood Jesus' diagnosis. When you go to the doctors and they start telling you something, questions come to your mind, don't they? Well, our first question then is, what's the extent of this problem? What's the extent of the problem? And Jesus says, well, do you know what? It's universal. Just think for a moment who Jesus is speaking to in these verses. I mean, he's not gone into a prison to speak to the criminal fraternity. He's not gone into a mental health clinic to talk to those with various disorders. He's not gone to an addiction center to talk to those who feed their drug addictions through crime. He's not gone to those who've experienced poverty or family breakdown. He's talking to the most upright and moral people in Israel. And he says, it's out of your own hearts that this is coming. He's talking to what we would describe as good people. He's talking, if we were to gather this group together today, he'd be calling in the teachers, the healthcare professionals, the charity workers, accountants and lawyers. You're fine, you can stay over there for now. But he's talking to those that we think, well, good on you, you're doing a great job, go do it. He's talking to the best of the best. And what he has to say to them is that this comes out of your heart too. We share the heart problem. It's not 1% who have this fault. It's not 5%. If you want to answer the question, why can't we get along? You need to answer this question first. Are human beings basically good? And that will set you onto a whole line of conclusions. And you'll either be with or against Jesus in your answer to that question. One study suggested 87% of people believe human beings are essentially good. But Jesus disagrees. And his followers are struggling with this diagnosis too. No wonder he has to say to them, verse 14, listen to me. You know, when someone says to you, listen, I have to do it to my own children sometimes, just stop, just listen, listen now. When Jesus says, listen to me, he knows it's because we don't want to listen. He's saying, listen to me, everyone, verse 14, and understand. Listen. Who knows more about the human heart, you or me? You go to your doctor, I've got these problems, I've got this. Who knows more, you or them? And then to his disciples again, verse 18, are you so dull? Don't you see? Every part of you, every part of me wants to avoid the conclusion that the problem is our human nature. We're all trying to find any other conclusion. Change society, change politics, change schools. It takes guts to see that we're part of the problem. It really does. Author and journalist J.K. Chesterton was asked, along with a number of other leading thinkers of his day, what is the problem with the world? And here's G.K. Chesterton's answer, published as a letter in the Times newspaper. Chesterton said, dear sir, I am yours sincerely, G.K. Chesterton. What is the problem with the world? It'd be interesting on Newsnight or Question Time, wouldn't it? What do you think the problem is here? Well, it's essentially me. This wouldn't happen, would it? What's the essence of the human problem? Well, what's at fault is that our hearts are inherently selfish. And that's why we can't get along. It's what comes out of our hearts. And Jesus describes it as this thing called evil thoughts. Do you see that at the end of verse 21? And then he gives a list of 12 kind of symptoms. 6 of them are evil actions, the first 6, whether that's from greed or sexual immorality. And then 6 of them are evil attitudes. So 6 evil actions, six evil attitudes, and they include things such as arrogance, envy, slander. So he's saying there's something deep within us, a sort of a selfish nature, that gives rise to both evil attitudes and at times evil actions. And elsewhere in the Bible, we find a word called sin used to describe this. And if you think about it, it's very simple. S-I-N, I in the center. That's what sin is. And it all started in the Garden of Eden. It all started with those first human beings who began to say no to God and yes to me first. Yes to my way or the highway. This is my life. I'll live it the way I want. And God and no one else is going to get in the way. No one else is going to get in the way. And if they do, it'll be too bad for them. The reason we can't get on is because we're selfish creatures. Langdon Gilkey was an American teacher in a Chinese university when Japan invaded China during the Second World War. And Gilkey and around 2,000 other individuals, including Eric Liddell, the gold medalist from Chariots of Fire and the Christian missionary, Gilkey and Liddell, and actually a lady I know here in Birmingham, were all put into this same internment camp. 2,000 people. And Japanese captors provided the bare minimum of food. It wasn't starvation rations, but it was the bare minimum of food, provided coal that they could be kept warm. And the Japanese guards told the inmates to run the camp. Run it yourself. And what Gilkey discovered as a young man in his 20s, as this teacher from America, what he discovered about human nature led him to write a book. And he called it this, the Shang Tung Compound, the story of men and women under pressure. And what he discovers and what he relays to us in the book is that most of the people who were white, educated, and Western, what they tended to do most of the time was to look out for themselves and their families. They refused to do more than the bare minimum of work. They refused to give up food and housing to those in greater need. They stole food and supplies, and they refused to punish wrongdoing. Gilkey says in his book, human beings under pressure find ways to defend and rationalize and justify selfish behavior. And this was what he concluded. He said this, one of the particular conceits of modern optimism, a conceit which I fully shared, is the belief that in a times of crisis, the goodness of men comes forward. Nothing indicates so clearly the fixed belief in the goodness of humans as does this confidence that when the chips are down, we're revealed that what we really are is people who will be good to each other. What he discovered was exactly the opposite, was the reality. And you could summarize the book in these 13 words. They're not his, but I think this is essentially a summary of it. He's essentially saying in the book, I thought people were good. The camp showed me that is not true. That's what the camp showed him. The essence of our heart problem, self-centeredness. Thirdly, the consequence of our heart problem. Do you see verse 23? All these evils come from inside and defile a person. See, the big issue actually is not that we can't get along with each other. The big issue is that we can't get along with God. And that actually our sin or our selfishness not only turns us against each other, but turns us against our Maker, against God himself. Fascinating, the conclusion that Gandhi reached looking back on his life that he wrote of in the introduction to his autobiography. This is what Gandhi had to say about himself. I hope to acquaint the reader fully with all my faults and errors. In judging myself, I shall try to be as harsh as truth as I want others also to be. Measuring myself by that standard, I must exclaim, where is there a wretch so miserable and loathsome as I. I have forsaken my Maker, so faithless have I been. He goes on, for it is an unbroken torture to me that I am still so far from him who, as I fully know, governs every breath of my life and whose offspring I am. I know, here's his conclusion, Gandhi's conclusion, that it is the evil passions within that keep me so far from him. And yet, I cannot get away from them. The evil passions within that breaks up our relationships. William Golding told it in that parable as he talked about, what's the book, Golding's? Lord of the Flies. A bunch of kids on an island. What happens if you leave a bunch of kids on an island? They go feral. It's lawless. It's carnage. People, in his account, potentially even die. I think deep down we know that what Jesus is saying is true. I said to one of my kids yesterday, simple thought experiment. I said, just imagine that we knew a comet was about to strike planet Earth. And the whole world knew we had 1 week left on planet Earth. I said, how would you expect people to behave? And how safe would you feel? And he said, I would expect chaos. And we would, wouldn't we? We'd expect disorder and chaos. If people thought, I can do whatever I like and I'm going to get away with it because society doesn't have enough time to catch up with me, we've all got 1 week left, I suggest we would all be deeply afraid. Because we know that rules and rituals and human traditions can keep a lid on things. But actually, deep down, we know that it is the evil passions within that break up relationships, not only between ourselves, but between ourselves and the God who has made us. Why won't we ever learn to get along? Because we have selfish hearts. And we may never have seen what Landon Gilkey saw in a camp. We may not have thought as long and hard as Gandhi did about these issues. But Jesus has shown us and taught us this morning the true nature of the human heart. And the solution? A radical change in the human heart is what is needed. And the good news is that Jesus said that is why he came. It's bad news, isn't it, when you go to the doctor, if this has ever happened to you, and he says your heart is seriously messed up. That is bad news. It's good news when the doctor then looks across the table and says, but I can fix it. It's good news. This morning, it's bad news and good news because Jesus is saying, this is not just the nature of the problem, but I also have the solution. There is someone who is able to put things right. And the whole story of the Bible is of God's plan to undo all of the effects and the consequences of our selfishness and of our actions, to put it all right. God says there's no power in the world that can put it right, but I can do it. And so along with the prophet Isaiah, there was another man writing at a similar time called Ezekiel, and God spoke through Ezekiel, and God made this promise. He said, I will sprinkle clean water on you, and you will be clean. I will cleanse you from all your impurities and from all your idols. I will give you a new heart and put a new spirit in you. I will remove from you your heart of stone and give you a heart of flesh. And I will put my spirit in you and move you to follow my decrees and to be careful to keep my laws. And Jesus said, this is why I have come, to fulfill this promise. And Jesus, just a few chapters later in Mark chapter 10, says, I didn't come to be served. Jesus was not selfish when he came to earth. That I didn't come to be served, but to serve and to give my life as a ransom for many. Jesus said, I've come to cleanse you from your defilement. I've come to restore you to God. And I've come to do that through my own death on a cross, to pay on my body the penalty for your selfishness and wrongdoing. And Jesus said, and then I will put my spirit in you to give you new desires and a new heart that is not selfish, but actually seeks to love God and to love neighbor. And you know, the Bible ends with the story of a day that is coming when a new people in a new world with new hearts will love and serve God and one another forever. That's the Bible's definition of heaven. New people with new hearts in a new world who will love and serve God forever. And you and I can be part of that if we accept not only the forgiveness that Jesus offers, but the new heart that he also promises to all who will follow him. So if you are someone just looking into Christian things, can I firstly say thank you for coming and at least giving Christianity a hearing in terms of an answer to this question. We actually have church lunch today. We do that one Sunday a month. And between our